Hello, I'm Karen Mitchell. I'm a master's student at Purdue University, and I've been conducting research on the effect of biochar on crops and weed species. Today, I'll be talking to you specifically about the effect of biochar on root growth of large crabgrass. And first, a little bit of background for anybody that isn't familiar with biochar. It is a carbon-rich product produced by heating organic material, or also referred to as feedstock, and it's heated in the absence of oxygen. Biochar is used as a soil amendment and has many benefits to the soil. So it increases water retention, cation exchange capacity, can it increase microbial diversity and crop productivity, as well as a way to sequester carbon in the soil. And so you may say, why, if it's so great, why are we not applying it to all fields? And that's because there's many disadvantages or possible disadvantages, one of which is the cost. So right now, unless you have a portable pyrolysis unit in your backyard, it could cost up to $10,000 an acre to apply. There's also been studies showing that there's variable hormone interactions, as well as soil and plant interactions. So depending on the type of soil and plants that you use it with, there's variable interactions. There's actually been studies that show it decreases crop productivity. And as a weed scientist, I am most interested in the possibility that biochar could increase weed pressure and decrease herbicide efficacy. And so specifically today, I'm going to be talking about the experiment where I compared the effect of two different types of biochar on the root growth and root system architecture of large crabgrass grown in rhizotrons. And so the materials that I've used, large crabgrass is globally distributed, well-known in agricultural turf and home lawns. So it's a very important weed. And the soil I used is a sandy loam that I collected from a conventional agricultural field. The sandy loam soil has been found to have, you see the most effect with biochar and sandy loam. And the biochar I used, I incorporated at a rate of 2%. And both of the types were produced by slow pyrolysis at 450 degrees C. And I have two different types. The first one is nutrient poor, which was produced from a mixture of softwoods, fir, pine, and spruce. And then the nutrient rich was a mixture of loblolly, pine, and switchgrass. And so before I started my experiment, I did analysis on the soil and biochar. And I'll draw your attention to the nutrient poor biochar analysis. It has a extremely high pH, very high carbon to nitrogen ratio, and fairly low on the nutrient size. And then the nutrient rich biochar had a very neutral pH, a low carbon to nitrogen ratio, and extremely high on a lot of the nutrients, including a high CEC. And so my experimental design, I had a complete randomized design with three soil treatments. I had the unamended field soil, the field soil amended with 2% nutrient-rich biochar, and another one, field soil with 2% nutrient-poor biochar. And then I used two rhizotron designs, which I'll explain later. I refer to as a solid and a split. And I replicated each four times, and then I repeated the experiment in two different growth chambers. And so here's a picture of the rhizotrons in the growth chamber. I constructed them using two pieces of acrylic sheets held together with binder clips. So I placed the soil in between, I filled one side of the acrylic sheet with soil, placed a seedling with a consistent root length into the very center of the rhizotron, and I put the other acrylic sheet on top and then clipped it together with binder clips. They're grown out for 38 days after transplant in a growth chamber, and then after 38 days, I scanned them with a flatbed scanner, and then I harvested above and below ground biomass. And so here's a picture of the solid and split design. You'll see on the solid design, I had the soil uniformly throughout the whole rhizotron, either the unamended or the amended soil, uniform throughout. And then for the split design, I gave the plant a choice. So on half of it, I used the unamended field soil, and then on the other half, I used the field soil amended with either the nutrient poor or nutrient rich biochar. And I was very careful to make it split evenly, and then I placed the root in the very center line. And then once I had the root images, I used ImageJ with a Smart Root plugin to analyze the images, and then I completed my statistical analysis with SAS, ANOVA, and used the LS mean separation test. I'm gonna get some more. So I'm going to get right into the results here. So this is a picture, an image of the unamended, the rhizo, the crabgrass growing in the unamended field soil. You can see it has a very fibrous root system. There's many primaries, or what I'll refer to as primaries. So there's many primary roots, and then each one of the roots coming off the primaries I'll refer to as secondary. Any roots coming off, or any laterals coming off the secondary, I'll refer to tertiary. And then here's an image of the large crabgrass grown in the nutrient-poor biochar. You can see it has slightly thicker primary roots, has less of a spread, but I'll show that more in the graphs. And then here's the nutrient-rich biochar, which was very stood out. So the roots are not even trying to spread out, not even searching through the soil, just straight down. We'll just get right into the graphs. So I'll tell you now that all of the graphs I'm going to show you up until I get to the split design, the values are the means of 8 plants with the error bars represented showing the standard error. And then bars within a root order, so I explained the primary, secondary, or tertiary root order. The letters within a root order, if they're different, they're significantly different. At 0.5 or 0.05. I didn't even explain them. All right, so that's going to be consistent through all of them. And so here I'm showing the total root length, which is all the primary roots added together, secondary and tertiary, all added together on this first graph here. And so you can see there's not a difference in the total root length of primaries, but you'll see that the nutrient poor, so the nutrient poor is in red, actually had larger total root length for secondary and tertiary roots. But then when I take into consideration the number of roots and look at the average root length, you'll notice that the nutrient poor actually had much longer primary roots, longer primary, secondary, and tertiary roots. And you don't see much of a difference between the unamended and the nutrient rich. And so for the people that can't see over here, it goes in order, primary, secondary, tertiary, and the blue will always be unamended, red will be poor, and green will be rich. And so here's the average root width. You'll notice that in the primary roots, the nutrient poor biochar actually had thicker roots, which we could see in those pictures. And then for secondary and tertiary roots, the biochar increased root width regardless of the feedstock used. And so then I also harvested the biomass, so I didn't look just at the roots. And here's the stem weight and the leaf dry weight. So stem weight here and then leaf dry weight here. You'll see a trend, but it wasn't significantly different. So the nutrient rich was greater, but not significantly. But then when you look at just the root dry weight, you'll notice that the nutrient poor biochar actually had a greater root weight. And then when you look at the total dry weight, again, there is no significant difference. You kind of see the same trend as the root dry weight, but again, not significant. So then when you look at the root shoot ratio, so the root weight divided by the shoot weight, you'll notice that the nutrient-rich biochar actually has a significantly less root-shoot ratio. And this suggests that it's partitioning less biomass to the roots and more to the shoots, which could be problematic when you're talking about large crabgrass because it does spread by tillering. And so if it's producing more above ground and less below, it could increase its ability to spread. And then when you look at the number of tillers, so it was noticeable that the unamended large crabgrass always produced one. Very rarely did it produce more than one tiller, but the nutrient poor and nutrient rich were always producing two or more. Again, and that could increase its ability to spread. So if it's increasing its biomass above biomass and it's increasing its tillering, it's increasing its ability to spread. And so before I get too far into the split crabgrass or split design crabgrass, I'm going to let you know that I have not finished the root system architecture analysis on this. So right now all I'm it's a little bit more complicated. Since it's split, it takes a little bit more time to analyze these roots. But you'll notice from the pictures that the nutrient poor or the biochar is on the left side and the unamended is on the right side here. In both cases, the large crabgrass preferred the biochar, which is shown with the root dry weight. You'll see the blue is the unamended and red is the nutrient poor and green is the nutrient rich. Both times, the large crabgrass produced more roots on the amended side when compared to the unamended side. So just a recap of my results. It increased the nutrient poor biochar increased average root length, and the nutrient rich biochar reduced the root shoot ratio or reduced partitioning to roots relative to the nutrient poor and unamended. Biochar, regardless of the feedstock, increased secondary and tertiary root width as well as tillering. And then when given a choice, large crabgrass preferred the biochar amended soil over the unamended. So in conclusion, biochar does impact plant biomass partitioning and root system architecture. And although biochar had no effect on the total plant dry weight, it may increase the ability of large crabgrass to spread by tillering and increasing tillering and decreasing root shoot ratio. So biochar may increase weed pressure and complicate current weed management practices and should be considered before applying biochar irreversibly to the soil. Thank you, and I'll take any questions and comments. So the nutrient poor was produced from a mixture of softwoods, spruce, pine, and fir. And the nutrient rich one was a mixture of loblolly pine and switchgrass.
So these are what, the woods of the
wood? Right, so that's the organic material that you can put in the pyrolysis unit, which is a high heat, or it's actually relatively low heat, in the absence of oxygen. So actually, when producing biochar, it's actually considered a carbon negative process because you're putting the organic material that would normally just decompose within a couple years, you're putting that into a more or a less labile source of carbon. So you're putting that in the soil, and it could stay in the soil for hundreds to thousands to millions of years. We're not really sure on that part. So you're storing that carbon in the soil. And then actually in the production process, they collect syngas and bio-oil, so they can actually use the waste material from biochar production for renewable energy.
How do you explain the partitioning and biomass allocation under the nutrient-rich biochar?
So the question was, how do I explain the partitioning of biomass in the nutrient-rich biochar? And we believe that it's because there is more nutrients in the soil, the plant doesn't have to spend as much energy to increase root growth and spread. Instead, it can use all that nutrients and energy into producing above ground. Yes. So the question was, would I see differences if the biochar was produced at a higher temperature? And you'll see there's a large gradient of effects depending on the temperature that the biochar was produced at. That's why I kept the temperature the same and changed the feedstock. It's been found that the lower new temperature biochar has a higher CEC and is more beneficial and most likely used for like a fertilizer effect. If you have a higher temperature biochar, it's going to have a lower CEC. Right. So, I mean, we consider the question was how would this differ from a fertilizer effect, and I don't believe it would. So they consider this a fertilizer effect. So the more fertilizer you put on, the less roots the plant's going to need. So I'm pretty sure this is similar to a fertilizer effect with the high nutrient biochar. Did that answer your question? I'm sorry. The only reason, so is it worse, why would we use bio, or why would we be concerned about weed pressure, fertilizer, right? And that's because biochar can decrease the herbicide efficacy. It can bind to herbicides, so normally people would apply fertilizers and then they would apply herbicides to control the weeds, but that's not maybe possible, but right now we don't know if that is going to be possible. You're going to have to adjust rates because it actually can bind to the herbicides and cause toxicity. And so we're not sure if it can be used in a conventional manner.